I'm Leah Ferguson from the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and this is Alaska Voices, a place where community members, friends, and scientists can share stories and place-based knowledge in order to build a better tomorrow for Alaskans and the world.
Originally, I grew up in Gakona, Alaska.
Tyonek.
Egypt.
Idaho.
Grand Parc.
St. Lawrence Island.
St. Paul.
And I'm here with my student,
my science buddy.
My teacher.
My homie.
I'm his daughter.
My name is Charlie Parr, and I'm a geospatial data guru, programmer, scientist person at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I'm from Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm here today with my colleague, Josh.
I'm Josh Ball. I'm also a programmer, primarily with geospatial data. Work for a scenarios network for Arctic and Alaska planning at UAF here. It's pretty new for me to say that I'm a programmer. I didn't used to be a programmer. I used to be a soil scientist who made maps and then started using GIS and realized, you know, pointing and clicking my way through the processing pipeline for data is the slow way to do stuff. And so if you learn how to program the computer, tell the computer what you want to do, you can actually do a lot more and have the computer do the work for you. I think you had a pretty similar journey, Charlie, right? Like you didn't start out as a computer science programmer type guy when you got out of high school and decided to start a career, right?
Yeah, that's correct. My undergraduate degree is in geography. And in that experience, I used a lot of GIS software. Someone told me, you know, if you really want to sort of own your geospatial situation, learn to program, specifically learn to program in Python. And that was probably around 2013 or 2014. I got a job working as a snow scientist, which is like being a soil scientist, probably. There's probably shovels involved.
Soil that melts.
There you go. Yeah. and its water content is 100%.
There are a lot of shovels involved. Yeah. This is common. This is a common way to get into programming. Kind of sucks people in, I think, from different disciplines where you have a problem to solve and you realize, man, I need to learn a programming language to do this or else it's going to take me forever. Or it's just an impossible problem to solve without a programming language. Then you start programming and then all of a sudden you kind of leave your field that you started in and you're a programmer. And then you can work in a bunch of different fields, really. You can help out scientists from all sorts of different disciplines because you know how to speak the language of data.
To your point, yeah, I think it's also a good way to learn because you have a problem that you're trying to solve. I think it would have been difficult for me to just learn programming or get my start in programming in sort of an abstract or academic way. I think having a very real world science type of objective that I was trying to accomplish really motivated me and made it interesting and engaging for me to learn. Josh, question, are you a climate modeler?
No, absolutely not. I don't make the models. I don't know a lot about climate science, like atmospheric sciences. I'm more of like a data wrangler, trying to take those modeling products and do things with them. What about you?
Same. We're not climate modelers. We work with climate data. We do a lot of things to streamline access and distill it and make it more accessible to people. There are dozens, if not hundreds, of different climate models that are available throughout the world. And all these climate models have maybe different assumptions about how certain types of atmospheric physics work. And then, of course, you can have sort of different assumptions built into the climate models about how humans are likely to function in the future and contribute or not contribute greenhouse gases to the atmosphere, and what those feedbacks might be like in the climate system. We call those scenarios generally. So there's many, many different climate models, different emission scenarios, but luckily there's some global cooperation to create experiments where you take a bunch of different climate models and give them the same set of inputs and see what happens.
You know, we throw around a lot of acronyms and one of them is CMIP, but this is the Coupled Model Intercomparison Project. The group that runs the CMIP project was able to kind of put out this call and say, we're doing this project. These are the parameters. And then all the modeling groups all over the globe use those same parameters to do their own modeling experiments. And then you can compare them apples to apples. And it's incredible that it happens at all.
And that allows people to compare results across all these different models. And then you can start to determine for your geographic area, say Alaska or the Arctic, what are the most skilled models for predicting things like sea surface temperature or sea level pressure or temperature or precipitation or whatever variable you might be interested in. Which of those big group of models do the best? And then we also sort of distill this into easy to get packages of data that researchers could grab and use for their research, or people that are writing grants or community members could then get this information, get some context around it, and be able to use climate change information in their work.
In a word, we'd say that's curation. I mean, you could be a highly decorated PhD in a very specific field like biology or something, and you want to use climate data in your work, but that's not really your specialty. You're used to, you know, you're counting newts or something. And so having some support staff, science support staff like us, like in between the kind of hard to parse climate data and your discipline as a scientist, we do that sort of work all the time. We have a little bit of experience in the field. And so this isn't just data. It's not just numbers. We know it's actually trying to represent something real on the ground that we may have experienced or have a little bit of real life experience of. And that's super helpful. If you were just purely a programmer and had never actually been a field in Alaska, and you're dealing with all this Alaska data, you might not realize when some values are maybe unrealistic or wrong, you know, without running it by an expert. It wasn't long ago we were looking at some projected precipitation, and there were some pixels in Southeast Alaska that were like kind of a bonkers number, like 500 inches of rain a year. And we're just like, is that realistic? Like, is that okay for the model to predict that? You know, the models aren't perfect and they're like global models. And so are the values going to be realistic everywhere? Like, maybe not. Maybe the modeling at the top of Denali is going to be a little weird because it's just like a pretty extreme place on the globe.
We also do something that's called downscaling, which is bring those models from a really coarse resolution where maybe you have one prediction for every like 1 by 1 degree square of latitude and longitude to something like, okay, now you have a prediction for every square kilometer.
I think a lot of people don't realize how many people are doing this. The level of cooperation that happens is pretty amazing.
It really underscores how important climate is as like a prime driver of all of our human activities. You know, climate really determines where people live and types of industries we engage in and how we recreate in our culture and our food and our agriculture. And so climate, to me, I really view it as like a prime driver of life on Earth, really, not just human life, of course, but, you know, plant and animal life as well. And so I think that's why there's such incredible international cooperation to try to get a glimpse of what some climate futures might be that are ahead of us. Sometimes you see it written or it said that, you know, weather and climate is this unpredictable thing. And it's not. We actually predict both weather and climate all the time with a lot of skill. We do it really well, but there are some limits to how credibly we can do that. And certainly the further out you go in time, you know, the less certain you can become. And figuring out how to make sense of those predictions and projections and models is a lot of work, but at SNAP, you know, if you live in Alaska or in the Arctic, like we've done a lot of that hard work for you already. Sometimes we might make something that's a little bit more technical for engineers. We have a tool, the Arctic EDS, arcticeds.org. And sometimes it's for, you know, researchers, which is the case of the Arctic Data Collaborative, arcticdatascience.org. So we have different tools for different users, and we have web applications, you know, that people can use to get a handle on, you know, how a changing climate might impact where they live or the places they care about or what they do for work or where they recreate.
Especially Northern Climate Reports.
Yeah.
That one, I mean, we're talking a lot about data and numbers and stuff, but that tool gives plain language summaries of how a bunch of different climate factors are predicted to change in the next 100 years or so. That's northernclimatereports.org.
Yeah, I would encourage people to not despair in like this prospect of an unknowable climate future. You know, we have tools, good tools to get an idea of what might be coming. And of course, we hope that people can use that then to plan and prepare and adapt and navigate whatever's going to come our way from a climate perspective with more skill than would otherwise be possible.
Alaska Voices is a place for communities to connect through conversation. This podcast was the brainchild of Jesse Young Robertson and Bob Bolton with support from the Alaska Climate Adaptation Science Center, who also funded today's episode. The Alaska CASC is committed to providing regionally relevant science for Alaska's changing climate. Alaska Voices would not be possible without the efforts of an amazing group of people. Our producer and audio engineer is Kelsey Skonberg of Mossy Stone Media. The Alaska Voices team includes Micah Hahn at the University of Alaska Anchorage and Leah Ferguson, Mike DeLue, Annika Ord, and Diego Nareña at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. If you are interested in more conversations or information, please visit our website at alaskavoices.org.